It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, actor, director, and writer Tim Robbins has written a play called The New Colossus. It features 12 different true stories of immigrants and migrants, and it's going to be performed in Iowa City at Hancher Auditorium. I'll talk with him. But first, if you've spent any time living in eastern Iowa, you are probably familiar with Bruce Auney. He has been a familiar face and trusted voice in eastern Iowa living rooms for 34 years. He started anchoring the news on KCRG, the ABC affiliate in eastern Iowa, in March of 1986. He will retire this March, and he's here today to take a look back with us. Bruce, thank you so much for coming in.
It's great to be here. We made it all the way down from Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, and how were the roads?
Not too bad. We were moving along pretty well. So
good. Well, I appreciate
I stayed
you.
Under the speed limit. I'll tell you that.
All right. I appreciate you coming out in the cold for us. And let's go way back in time. You are a Midwesterner. You grew up in Minnesota, right?
Brainerd, Minnesota, up in the central part of the state. People think that's way up north, but it's actually right in the middle of the state. You got a long way to go before you get to Canada yet. So.
And are there Minnesotan accents up in Brainerd? Or
oh, yes.
Yeah.
It was funny because we saw the movie Fargo years ago, and I walked out thinking, I like the movie, but they really overdid the accent. And a couple of weeks after that, my uncle died, and I went up to Minnesota for the funeral. And it's a sad occasion, but I really had a hard time keeping a straight face all the time because everybody talked like that.
So they nailed the accent.
Yeah, so they had it right down to perfection almost.
When did you first start dreaming of becoming a broadcaster?
I never dreamed of becoming a broadcaster. I was going to be a professional actor. So hearing Tim Robbins' name, that really piqued my interest here. But I was in a summer theater company in the Brainerd Lakes area when I was before my senior year in high school. So it was the summer I turned 17. And one of the people involved with the community theater was the man who owned the local radio station, KLIZ Radio. And about late August, I was walking down the street in Brainerd one day, and his name was Tom O'Brien. And he pulled up next to me, rolled down his window, and said, "Hey, Bruce, would you like a job?" And I went, okay. And he said, "There's an opening at KLIZ. Tell him I sent you out there for it." So I went out. And the next week, I was on the air spinning records and reading the news and emptying the trash and filling the pop machine and doing everything like that. So that's pretty much how I started in broadcasting. And so, even then, I never dreamed that I was going to make a career of it.
So how did that happen?
I kept falling back into it. I went to college at a brand new school in Marshall, Minnesota, Southwest Minnesota State. And when I worked in radio at Redwood Falls, Minnesota, while I was going to school for a while, and did a little bit of radio work at the college. And I had a low draft number, 42. You never forget that number. And so I ended up enlisting after I graduated from college in 1971. And wound up as a sports reporter for the American Forces Radio Network in Frankfurt, Germany. So I kind of fell into that. And when I finished my 3 years in the Army, I started graduate school at what was then Mankato State University in Mankato, Minnesota. But I was married at the time and had a baby daughter, and I knew I needed a job. So I heard there was an opening at KEYC-TV, the local TV station. And I went out there thinking, I'm not going to get a job in television, but they hired me. So I kind of fell into that. And that was my first TV job then in 1974. And I've been working in it, except for one small stint where I worked in Alabama at a radio station. I've been working in TV since 1974.
Wow. And so you bounced around a little bit. You were in Mason City. You were in Lansing, Michigan. You bounced around to some of the small market television stations. What brought you to Cedar Rapids?
I was working in Lansing, Michigan, and I had been at KIMT in Mason City a couple of years earlier. So I was very familiar with Iowa. But KCRG at the time was a very bad number three in a three-station market. In fact, the chairman of the board used to say we were a bad number four in a three-station market. But I really didn't want to come to KCRG. I was going to use it as kind of a bidding tool with my station WILX in Lansing. And the stations actually did get into a little bit of a bidding war, and KCRG won out. And I came over here thinking I was going to spend three quick years and move on to big bucks and glory in some large market station. And here I am 34 years later, still at KCRG, and absolutely so happy that I stayed here, because there are many, many stories I've heard through the years of people who I've worked with who have gone on to bigger markets and hated it and got out of the business. So I'm very happy that I stayed at KCRG.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because 34 years, that's a remarkable time almost at any business, but especially at one television station, that's really rare for someone to spend that long in the anchor chair. Did you make a conscious decision at some point of, you know what, I don't want to look further. I want to be here.
I think I was about into my second or third contract with KCRG when I pretty much made that decision. And I would visit Chicago, go to St. Louis, go to Minneapolis, and I love larger cities, but I really made a conscious decision that I did not want to live in a larger city like that. I don't like traffic, and battling that every day would just, I think it would drive me nuts. So it was probably about maybe 8 years into my time at KCRG that I decided that this was a spot to stay. Plus, I have to admit, the station has been very good to me as well. So that was a little incentive to stay, as also just knowing that I was making a pretty good living, and it's a good, Cedar Rapids and Iowa City is a great area to live.
Well, and I can imagine a quality of life at a smaller station in a smaller town for someone who kept your hours or keeps your hours. I would imagine quality of life is better for you. I can't imagine somebody who anchors in Chicago being able to get home for dinner and then make it back to the station in time for the 10 o'clock newscast. Tell us a little bit about your daily schedule.
I go into work about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have the first thing I do is we go to a story meeting where we all get together with the producers and the news director and other reporters and the other anchors and just basically go through what is going into the 5, 6, and 10 o'clock news that night. And at that point, I am not always even up to date on exactly what we're covering, because I try to stay a little bit, but sometimes things are popping up that I have no idea that they're popping up. And then I go to work in the afternoon, basically working on, I do a lot of fact checking, just making sure that everything that we're putting on the newscast is accurate. And I rewrite a lot. Almost every story I read on the air, I have rewritten, because it helps me in a lot of ways. One is just getting into kind of my reading style,
your voice,
the way I want to deliver that story. And also it helps familiarize me with that story, that if perchance, and this has happened, that the prompter goes down or I don't have that script, I actually can ad lib a story like that. So I wouldn't want to do it extensively, but it has happened that so just familiarizing myself with what is in that one little report really helps also. And then, you're basically getting myself up for a newscast. I have to apply a little bit of makeup. a lot of people don't know that, but we do wear makeup.
I think it's an open secret
okay,
at this point.
All right. Okay. And I finish the 6 o'clock news, and we do some recordings, some promotion work, and then I head home for dinner. And that's one thing you're saying. I agree with you on that I live about 10 minutes away from work, so it's very easy to drive home, have dinner with my wife, spend a little time with Darcy, and then about 8 o'clock or a little after, I head back to work, and we get ready for the 10 o'clock news. And then I'm usually out of the station by about 10:45 at night, and usually home again by 11. And once in a while, my beautiful wife is still awake. She's sitting here. So
right. So You are in this unusual position, living in a community where absolutely everyone knows your face and your name. What is that like to be part of this community, but also to be someone that people look at as someone a little bit apart from them?
It's humbling, really, because I am always amazed at how people respond. I don't look at myself as a celebrity by any means. In fact, I really don't like that word. I don't think of myself ever as a celebrity. But I have people come up and just, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful to meet you. I've watched you since I was a little boy or a little girl or whatever. My kids love you and things like that. You came and read to my class when I was in kindergarten. And, oh, well, you've grown up a little bit.
Right. But they still remember.
So it's flattering. It's humbling. But it also is something that it's fun to get away from, too. We like to travel, and we get into other locations. And just being in a situation where I know nobody's going to recognize me, it's kind of nice where I'm suddenly anonymous. And the thing that astounds me is I just experience a fraction of what some sports figures and movie celebrities and others experience with paparazzi chasing them all over the place. I have just a tiny, tiny fraction of that. So I can't even imagine what life must be like experiencing that every day. But it's fun. I enjoy people, and people are generally very, very nice and very open and welcoming, and it's really unusual for anybody to come up with something negative that they're going to approach me about.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest right now is Bruce Auney. He has been a familiar face and a trusted voice in Eastern Iowa living rooms for 34 years. He's been anchoring the news on KCRG, the ABC affiliate in Eastern Iowa, since March of 1986, and he is retiring next month. In a few minutes, we will talk about some of his career highlights during that 34-year career, and you're welcome to join us as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I'll talk with actor, director, and writer Tim Robbins about his new play, The New Colossus. With me now is Bruce Auney. He has been anchoring the news on KCRG, the ABC affiliate in Eastern Iowa, for 34 years. He will retire next month, and we're taking a look back at his career this hour. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions and your memories, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bruce, earlier you mentioned that when you came to Cedar Rapids, the ABC affiliate was a distant third in a three-station market. But things really turned around for KCRG, and you were a big part of that turnaround. Can you tell me about, I think that there was a story that really helped you make your mark.
One of the biggest stories, I think, that helped us establish us as a station people might want to turn to for news coverage, and I hate to say it, but it was the shootings at the University of Iowa in 1991. A lot of young people today aren't even aware of what happened.
Right. Gong Liu killed 4 people,
right.
Injured 2 others at the Graduate Department of Physics and Astronomy,
yes,
at the University of Iowa.
And we were in the newsroom that afternoon, and my co-anchor, Edie Fawcett, who lives here in Iowa City, we heard about this story, and she suddenly said, I think one of us should get down to Iowa City for this to field anchor. And we said that to our assistant news director, and he looked at Edie. She lived in Iowa City. He said, go. So she got down here, and we really gave extensive coverage to that story to the point where we open-ended our newscasts, where instead of ending at a specific point, we just kept going with it. I got called in for the Saturday night newscast because our regular anchor was snowed in Minneapolis. And we went, I can't even remember how long it was, but I had James Van Allen, the physics professor emeritus, on live. And we just talked about each of the physics professors who had lost their lives, and people told me later that what they appreciated was the fact that we gave the story time rather than doing an interview that would have been a minute and a half or 2 minutes. We talked for 8 minutes or so about each person, and people were just engrossed by that. And so I think that was really one of the points that people started really focusing and noticing KCRG and our news coverage. And there were others through the years, the tornado in Washington, Iowa, that actually was moving up here toward Iowa City as well. We had excellent coverage of that with good old Newscopter 9 back then. And our weather coverage was a big, big factor. And it got to the point where it took a long time. People in eastern Iowa are very loyal to their TV stations. And we probably got to number one in the market about 20 years ago, roughly. And we've been able to maintain it through that stretch. But it's nice that people have stayed loyal to us. The other big story is, of course, the flooding. People remember the flooding in 2008, but we also had devastating floods in 1993.
Right.
And that was something that we covered extensively. And 2008, of course, all of us who experienced that will never forget that. Throughout Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, so many small towns that were flooded, people would call and say, how come you're not getting to our town to cover us? And we're going, we can't get there. That was a huge, huge point, too. But I still have people coming up to me at different locations and just saying how much we appreciated Bruce and Beth Malicki, my co-anchor, how much the information you gave us and the hours you spent on television just reassuring us and letting us know that things are going to be all right. And that still is very humbling and satisfying, I guess, in a way, too, to know that we were able to give coverage like that.
One of the, I guess, ironies of your position is that the moments when all eyes are on you are usually really difficult moments. How do you deal with that emotionally? In 2008, you were watching your town go underwater.
It's tough. My wife will tell you that I have a tendency to tear up during commercials on television. Tears start rolling very easily for me. And there are many, many times where I am reading something on the air and it really does hit me personally, just especially if it's something that affects kids. There are so many horrible stories that involve children, and reading those, we'll go to a commercial break, and that's when we kind of regroup and get things under control again. But I don't know if people can see, but often when we come out of a story, I might have tears in my eyes, and my voice is broken several times through the years. So it's not easy. There's the old thing, too, of newsroom humor, which is horrible when you think about it. But I know police officers do this and other people, maybe in hospitals and things, because if you didn't, I think you would go bonkers.
Yeah.
Just going through this every day. So we come up with just crazy jokes and things that are horrible. I would not repeat them outside the newsroom. Just because it lightens things up a little bit and allows us to really kind of focus on it without breaking up emotionally.
We have an email from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, I just want to thank Bruce for the work he did during that 2008 flood. Nobody knew what to do. Nobody had expected that level of devastation, and we were all glued to the television, hoping to hear any little thing about how Cedar Rapids was going to survive and what we all needed to do. I don't watch news on TV, but for those few days, it was the only thing I watched, and Bruce and Beth's extended coverage and apparent imprisonment at the station really helped keep things under control and gave me and my family the touchstone we needed to keep our wits while my sister-in-law's house was completely destroyed, which meant we suddenly had a very crowded house. Thank you so much for all that you do. And during those floods of 2008, there was water in the basement of the TV station, wasn't there?
Yes, we lost power. We were operating with a generator. We were in the mandatory evacuation area in downtown Cedar Rapids, and the water got up to about a half a block from the station, the river itself, but there was water in the basement. And we had to go through the National Guard barrier every day when we did leave the area and come back and show ID. And our CEO for the company at the time, they came in and told him that everybody has to leave. And he goes, nobody's leaving. We are here broadcasting, and thank the Lord we were able to stay, because if we had to pull the plug and go somewhere else, there are other stations covering it, of course, but our coverage definitely would not have been anything like what we were able to do. And it was so hot in the studio because we had no air conditioning. People still comment about how I ripped my tie off and had an open collar shirt, and it was, looking back, but the news is funny because, and this sounds funny to people who are not in the business, but when bad, tragic things happen, we shift into a higher gear. And I don't want to say that we enjoy it, but we really get into it's almost like a new experience for us, that you're getting into something much, much more in depth. And when you look back at it, it is satisfying. We don't want that these
right.
things
not
to happen
that you're
by
happy
any
that it
means.
Happened,
right. But for us, this is when we are really doing our jobs, and it's great to hear comments like that from Stephanie as well. I still hear those, and it's amazing.
I'm talking with Bruce Auney. He is a news anchor for KCRG, the ABC affiliate in Eastern Iowa. He'll be retiring after 34 years next month. And you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions and your memories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, of course, one of the things, we just went through another caucus season, and one of the things that some of our news colleagues in other states are a little jealous of the kind of access that Iowans and Iowa news reporters have to politicians. Things have changed a lot over the years. How do you feel your access to some of the nominees or the people running for office has changed over the years?
We used to have candidates who would come just stop at the station and say, I'm here, would you like to do an interview? We would often have candidates come in, and we'd have them live on our 5 o'clock news or in the morning news. And all kinds of candidates, each party, independents, everything. Now we offered every presidential candidate this time to come in, and we would do a half hour interview that we would be putting on to our website and using selected portions of it for our newscasts and everything, absolutely free. And they would have an opportunity during that half hour to turn to the camera and just basically explain why I am running for president and go a couple of minutes like that, absolutely free airtime. We had hardly anyone take us up on it. And we did get some interviews, but they were probably about 10, maybe a couple, up to 20 minutes. And I really think today social media has, in a way, scared off some of the candidates and wondering how this is going to be used and what kind of response they're going to be getting. And it's really strange compared to what it was 25 years ago when they were so accessible. And today, trying to get a local interview sometimes can be really, really difficult. So that's one of the biggest changes. But boy, we've had everybody from Jack Kemp just stopping at the station back in, what was that, 90, I can't even remember the year, 88, 92, somewhere around there, just stopping in, I'm here, do you want to interview me? Orrin Hatch was running for president. I can't even remember all of the candidates. There were so many back then. But that's the biggest change. It's kind of puzzling to me because television advertising and radio advertising and everything is so expensive today. And for a political campaign, that I would think you would take advantage of free airtime that people can turn to at any time on a website for months and look at what your positions are in different issues and things, but hardly anybody's took us up on it.
Very interesting. You, of course, have seen tremendous changes in local news. I mean, when you started 34 years ago, cable was not at all what it is today. There's so much more competition for those viewers now. And another one of the big changes is that we have seen local stations lose their independence, be bought up by large conglomerates. Tell me how you feel about local news today versus local news when you started.
When I started, everybody is probably familiar with the movie Anchorman. And it's a little outrageous, I have to say. But one thing that was true about it, when I started in television, there were no women in the newsroom. And so that was a really key point of that movie, the first woman to come in who was part of the news operation. And so there have been huge, huge changes through the years. I mean, when I started, we were still shooting film and typing on manual typewriters. And the change that's probably been one of the biggest for me is Google. I look back now and go, how in heaven's name did we used to research stories? You went to the library. You did
used the card catalog.
Oh, my gosh. the time you had to put into just doing research for a story, where now we Google it so fast. So that's a huge change. Local news is, I think it's much, much more difficult now because we're getting into, people can get their information before they watch the 5 o'clock news. So when we go on at 5 o'clock, we know that they already may have been on a website. They may have seen something on Facebook posts. So many different areas that already give them the basic information about that story, the who, what, when, where, but the how and the why are things that we still really need to cover a little bit more in depth on our newscast. So I think that's one of the biggest changes. Also, getting a little bit more focus on the people who are really involved in individual stories, whether it's government or crime stories or entertainment, I mean, all kinds, anything. People as viewers are really interested in the people that the report is about. So that's been a big, big change. We used to go on years ago just giving the bare details of a story. Now you really have to get a little bit more into it to get beyond those initial questions. Everybody already knows them.
At the same time, though, I mean, we've seen shrinkage in our newspaper coverage and a lot of local news coverage. There are lots of communities where nobody's paying attention to what's going on at
right.
City Council and things like that. Do you feel like it's impossible to tell the whole story?
Well, I think one thing to me that's really sad is the loss of local news coverage in radio. Radio used to be every local station used to have a news operation. It may only have been one person or two. I was a one-person news department at a radio station once years ago. And we covered city council. We covered school board meetings. You covered everything and put that information out there. Now radio is, on the commercial side especially, is so much more syndicated, and we're getting away from that local coverage. Newspapers are another one. Boy, I still have to start my day or have a newspaper involved during the course of a day, physically have that newspaper, because I guess I'm just old school in that. But that is something that's really, really changing. People are just used to getting and their information from so many different locations. We're losing young people, too, as far as television. They are getting information, if they're getting the information, from many, many different sources other than tuning in specifically to a television newscast.
We have only about a minute left. I have to ask you, if you were surprised by how emotional people got when you shaved your mustache in 2003. People still ask you about that?
Oh, yes. Yes. Most times it's someone who's very young, like in their early 20s, and I'll just look at them and say, you had to be 8 or 9 years old when I did that.
It was very difficult emotionally. In 20 seconds, what are you going to be doing in retirement?
My wife and I are very active in our church, so we are looking forward to probably getting more involved in mission trips. We really, really enjoy that. And we want to do more volunteer work as well. We really realize the importance of that in our community.
Well, Bruce Owney, thank you so much for bringing us
it's
the
been
news
a
for so long. Thanks a lot. Bruce Owney, he is retiring from his job as the anchor on KCRG, our ABC affiliate in Eastern Iowa. He'll be retiring after 34 years next month. Coming up in just a moment, my conversation with actor, director, and writer Tim Robbins about his new play, The New Colossus. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.